Well, hello, this is DJ Frederick. Thanks for tuning in to this shortwave transmission of X-Radio. We're opening the world of bone music and X-ray audio with Stephen Coates.
Hello, this is Stephen Coates. I am the author of the X-ray audio project, the book X-ray Audio, The Strange Story of Soviet Music on the Bone, and the upcoming book Bone Music, a kind of sequel, a kind of expanded version of X-ray audio. I've told the story many times of how I first came across the culture of recording on X-ray when I found a record in a flea market in St. Petersburg, Leningrad as it was, which set me off on a quest to discover who made it, why they made it, and how they made it. And that quest kind of ate me, or has eaten me, for the last 7 or 8 years. The story of bone music is a story which largely took place in the late 30s through to the early 60s, in a time which we call the Cold War. And I'm recording this at a time when a new kind of Cold War seems to be starting. Russia has invaded Ukraine. In an alarming return to cultural repression, propaganda, censorship, and state tyranny, it seems that Russia has reverted to some of the ways that it was in the Soviet era. I have many Russian friends and some Ukrainian friends, and they are all living now under different kinds of terror. In my talks on X-ray audio, I have rather lightly speculated at times that the progress that's been made could easily be unmade without realizing or expecting that that would really happen. But now, here we are. Censorship, ever present to different degrees in modern Russia, has made a swift and brutal return to pre-perestroika Orwellian levels. Journalists face 15 years in prison for publishing fake news. Peaceful protesters carrying no war signs faced immediate 20 days detention. Liberal radio stations have been taken off air. And online access to alternative media sources has been restricted. The very word war has been banned in reference to the invasion. While singling out specific genres of music to be forbidden is probably now impossible and would likely be regarded as unnecessary, music isn't seen as such a threat. It will be no surprise if songs with perceived anti-war sentiments were censored. Remains to be seen whether such cultural repression can be maintained, especially amongst the generations of post-Soviet youth who have grown up with internet access and other relative freedoms. But the story of bone music suggests that it will not. What is the story of bone music? The Soviet story starts in Leningrad, really, in the late 40s, after the Second World War, when a small group of determined, devoted music lovers and bootleggers started to cut their own records onto X-ray film. It grew from there, spread throughout the Soviet Union to most major urban centres, and really for the next almost 20 years, was a samizdat way of people accessing the culture, the music that they actually loved and wanted to listen to, rather than the music that they were supposed to love and told to listen to. We think about it often as a Western music story in terms of poor benighted Soviets getting hold of rock and roll and jazz music, and of course that was a big part of it. But at least half, probably a lot more than half, of the music on X-ray records, I discovered, turned out to be Russian music. Russian emigre music, that is, music made by Russians who have fled the country, just as some of my friends have fled the country now and are living abroad in Turkey, in Lithuania, Latvia, Armenia, etc. Those songs, which were recorded abroad and were the songs that people really loved from the soul. In some ways, you could even call it the true, real bone music, the Soviet soul music, I've even described it as. Also, there was another genre of Russian music which was forbidden, and that was what's largely called blatnai music. We might describe it as urban folk It included all sorts of sub-styles, like Odessa songs, which were kind of witty, irreverent ballads. It included songs which were tragedies about the realities of Soviet life. Life in the gulags, life in the trenches, or life in the kitchens, where these songs were often sung privately and quietly, or in the communal courtyards behind the apartment blocks where people gathered, the places where they came together to share the culture and the songs that mattered. As I like to say, you can kill the singer, but you can't kill the song. And the songs lived on in those places, the communal places where people gathered. Bone Music, my new book, talks much more about that aspect of X-ray recording. Russians recording their own forbidden culture, as well as the groovy stuff which us here in the West were recording. When it came to accessing the source music to make X-ray bootlegs, records from abroad containing jazz, pop, rock and roll, and sometimes emigre music were smuggled in, maybe by sailors or travellers who had permission to go to the West, maybe by the sons and daughters of diplomats, the so-called golden youth, who had access to all sorts of Western goodies, including music. But for people who couldn't afford to access these records, which would have been very expensive, radio, shortwave radio, proved an invaluable source of material to be recorded. We here in the West were deliberately broadcasting into the Soviet Union with programs such as Wills Conover's Jazz Hour and other programs of pop and rock and roll, targeting Soviet youth, part of a kind of soft power grab during the Cold War era, kind of cultural weapons of the West. Jazz in particular was seen, with its emphasis on individualism as well as grooviness, as a way to seduce Soviet youth. And of course, it did. It did so much so that the Soviet authorities spent vast sums on trying to block Western broadcasts. Perhaps they were mainly concerned with voices from the West, but also music was part of the thing that they started to jam. I spoke to bootleggers who travelled to all sorts of places to avoid the jamming signals, a kind of distorted electronic bleeping, which was broadcast on the same wavelength as the Western broadcasts. Mikhail Farafanov told me that he travelled to places with hills that he could climb up and put his aerial up in his portable tape recorder to make recordings. And many young people in the Soviet Union who went to the so-called science clubs were able to improvise their own shortwave sets. Officially, they weren't supposed to go beyond certain bands, but of course, with a bit of ingenuity and tinkering, they were able to do so. And that became another way of accessing Western music and culture, even if it wasn't recorded onto X-ray. I think it's also important to remember that even though we imagine cultural repression to be the property of those people on the other side of the Iron Curtain, often music in the West, if not actually outright forbidden, was certainly disapproved of. Elvis, rock and roll, spoke of in very disparaging terms. In fact, Elvis was in fact banned briefly in a few places in the States. And Rock Around the Clock, Bill Haley's call to arms for teenagers, was certainly disapproved of and didn't get much radio play in the UK for quite a long time. Teenagers, generally speaking, were disapproved of throughout the West and the Eastern Bloc. Groups of teenagers like the Stilyagi, who I talk about in the book, the stylists, the followers of fashion, these youngsters in Leningrad and Moscow who aped Western fashions, or Western fashions as they imagined them to be, based on glimpsing a few films and magazines, flamboyant colours and patterns, strutting their stuff on Nevsky Prospect in Leningrad. They had their equivalents too, of course, in the other Eastern Bloc countries, like the Jamperchek, Hungary and Czechoslovakia, and the Teddy Boys, as we had them here in the UK, who were ripping it up, ripping up cinema seats and causing mayhem, dancing in the aisles. Youth culture, I suppose, has always been disapproved of by an older generation, still is in some ways. So the Russians weren't alone in that. It was maybe part of the time after the austerity and pain of the Second World War, that this new generation of young people, who were neither kids nor adults, unfamiliar to their older, more responsible and more settled peers who disapproved of them, and the bootleggers that we talk about, maybe we think about them as grown men, but in actual fact, really, they were early 20s, young bucks, people who were prepared to take a risk, people who loved music, but also were quite entrepreneurial. I think that's the other important thing which I discovered as I dug deeper into the story of Bone Music, is that people's motives were mixed. They weren't necessarily resistant fighters, determined to smash the system, as people have described them, you know, using jazz and rock and roll to bring down the Soviet tyranny. Even though they were accused of that at times, they were often described as hooligans and wreckers, parasites. They were probably more like punks in the mid-70s, or even hackers today. Anti-establishment by nature, but also out for fun, out for kudos, out to make a bit of cash. Now, of course, in the Soviet Union, they ran a lot more risks to do that. And some of the people that we've come across and detailed in the X-Ray Audio Project, suffered for that. Such was Ruslan Bogoslovsky, perhaps the most famous of the Soviet bootleggers, who spent at least three periods in prison in Russia for his activities. It didn't stop him. It couldn't stop him. It was in the bone, as it were, with him. What really stopped him was a development in music technology, the tape recorder. When tape recorders became available to Soviet citizens in the way that they were available to people in the West, there was no need any longer for this complicated, dirty, down-and-out street culture of X-ray recording. It was replaced by a home culture of recording. Bootlegging did not stop. In fact, bootlegging mushroomed. Artemy Trotsky told me that the period of Magnetizdat, recording bootlegs material onto tape, by far eclipsed the X-ray period because anybody could do it. In fact, one of the bootleggers that I met, who stopped cutting X-ray records when they were no longer needed, he then moved into renting out his record collection. He would travel around and people could hire his record collection by the hour and make copies of it onto tape. And then reel-to-reel tapes were replaced by tape cassettes, which played a huge part in the homegrown underground rock scene of Russia in the 70s and through the 80s to perestroika. And of course, tape cassette itself was replaced by CDs. I remember going to Russia one of the first times I went there, rather proudly taken by one of my young Russian friends to the flea market, where they showed me my own band's CDs, which had been bootlegged and placed in racks with thousands of others. You could get anything you wanted, all pirated. I wasn't quite sure whether to be pleased and proud or not. And Russians adopted downloading and file sharing via the internet with enthusiasm. And of course, these days, you don't even really need to do that because you can just stream it. Or can you? Will it be possible? Might it be possible that streaming and all that stuff itself may be put out of our reach by tyrannical regimes? Perhaps it seemed inconceivable 6 months ago, but maybe not now. Let's hope not. Thanks for listening. Let's keep listening.
All of us here at the Skybird Recycling Co-op wish to express much gratitude to Stephen Coates for his audio essay and participation in this project. Stephen's projects include The Real Tuesday Weld, the Bureau of Lost Culture radio show and podcast, and his new book, Bone Music, Soviet X-Ray Audio, available in 2022 from Strange Attractor Press. More information can be found at xrayaudio.com. We now continue with more of this shortwave transmission from X Radio. We'll be right back.
have rock and roll?
Of course.
Can I buy?
Sure, help yourself.
Но тем не менее, я считаю, что это было в 57 году, осенью, после школы, мы с приятелем пришли ко мне домой, и он меня озадачил, вытащив пластинку на костях и сказав: «Смотри, рок-н-ролл, Америка». И я впервые, я взял пластинку эту мягкую в руки и посмотрел на свет, и я увидел кости.
Знаете ли вы Мурку, Мурку дорогую, помнишь ли ты, Мурка, наш Рамон?
После этого я поставил эту пластиночку на мамин проигрыватель. Синий проигрыватель, юбилейный, закрутился, и я услышал голос Литл Ричарда. Я спросил у моего приятеля: а кто это? Я был настолько поражен этим экстатическим, вопящим голосом. А потом, через примерно 2 недели, этот же приятель мне говорит: хочешь, поехали со мной к гостиному двору в субботу вечером? Я знаю, там будет мужик, который сам прессует дома эти пластиночки и будет продавать. Хочешь купить? Я говорю: конечно. А Литл Ричард будет? Я у него спросил. Он говорит: да, конечно. И вот мы поехали с окраины города, с Оржевки.
In the Stalin period, it was really poor production of musical. You know, you can listen only Georgian songs or some Russian folk songs, I mean on radio. No jazz, or of course no rock and roll, no nothing.
My friend who have relatives who have contact with Western country, they can get, because I remember one record of with Elvis Presley cost one month's salary.
И поэтому, значит, это была первая часть. И вторые песни, которые были у нас также полузапрещены, это были песни эмигрантов. Но были песни не то, что эти были песни самые, а именно кто исполнял. Вот этих эмигрантов считали врагами России, и поэтому их как раз вот и не разрешалось исполнять нигде.
There's a huge appetite, like a huge demand amongst people to listen to this music, which is now forbidden. So whenever there's a demand like that, there are people who are trying to satisfy it.
И поэтому нашлись предприимчивые люди, вот сейчас я вернусь уже о костях, это предприимчивые люди, которые наладили выпуск пластинок на ребрах и которые сделали вот эту звукозаписывающую аппаратуру.
And they did it, and they found that an X-ray, because of its surface properties or its because it's quite soft, could take the groove and hold it, so that when it's played back, you know, the sound quality was reasonable.
We've seen special types of needles, cutting needles, which some of which are sort of chisel-shaped, which are used for actually cutting a groove, and other ones where they're pointed, where they're obviously used for actually just pressing a groove rather than cutting it.
The first lathe seems to have come into Leningrad in about 1946, brought by a Polish guy, and he set up a little business, actually. The idea was that you could go into his shop and use his recording lathe to record a few words or snatches of a song as a souvenir. But out of hours, he was using it to write bootlegs with. And we met one particular bootlegger, perhaps the last bootlegger standing, Rudy Fuchs. And the way that he got his first lathe so he could start recording was that he repeatedly went to the hospital and gave blood, and he got paid for every pint of blood that he gave, so he just kept doing it until he got enough blood to make bones.
And it was several kinds of music which we made and put on the people. It was, first of all, it was boogie-woogie music, after that rock and roll music. After that, it was some Russian emigrants' music, gypsy music.
Each record is a one of a kind, and each record is is produced in real time. So it's actually a time-consuming business.
И поэтому в дальнейшем надо было еще такой материал для этого, для того, чтобы можно было массово запустить это, так сказать, чтобы люди могли это покупать, эти пластинки. Вот тут и родилась гениальная идея вот музыки на костях.
То есть я бы сказал так, что их использовали все-таки вынужденно. Ну, вот не было в данный момент под рукой. Скорее всего, были какие-то связи там с поликлиниками, еще с чем-то. Это все же не так, все просто. Там были какие-то... Откуда это поступало?
В поликлиниках были так называемые рентгеновские снимки. Это была грудная клетка, там снимали людей. И в конце года это дело все накапливалось, значит, много. И в конце года это надо было все уничтожить, потому что это было пожарно опасно. И вот, когда для того, чтобы не было этой мороки, чтобы еще их сжигать, это, они с большим удовольствием отдали, все медицинские работники, отдали вот этим людям, которые их бесплатно фактически себя приобрели.
Bootleggers turn up at the back door of the hospital with some vodka and a few rubles, and the porters and nurses or whatever it was, the medical staff, get rid of this big pile of used x-rays. Job done.
Поэтому попробовали, как будет звучать. И звучало намного хуже, чем это было на пластинке, но вполне приемлемо для того, чтобы люди могли иметь представление об этой музыке.
Это всегда шип. Знаешь, так называемый песок, мы говорили. Ну, это с песком, я это не беру. Или давай за полцены, она трещит, как мы говорили, трещит, понимаешь? То есть ты ставишь пластинку, и там треск почти такой же громкий, как сама музыка.
Одновременно с этим был такой нюанс, что сами люди, которые их делали, вот эти пластинки, они их сами не продавали. Они находили людей, которые этим делом занимались и продавали эти пластинки.
Можно было купить или в обмен на полбанки, в то время в России бутылка водки была обменным как бы валютой, как бы, понимаешь?
You would approach, some muttered words would be swapped. Maybe you'd say rock and roll or jazz or tango, whatever it was you wanted, and then the dealer would open their coat in classic dealer fashion and bring one of these out. The great thing about these, of course, is that they're flexible. So it's said that dealers could fit up to 50, 25 in each sleeve rolled up here, or possibly against their own ribs.
Там где колоннада вот эта вот, он вышел из-за колонны, помню, и сказал нам, пойдем. И мы с ним зашли в темное место, в угол какой-то неосвещенный, плохо освещенный. И он достал целый сверток этих пластинок на костях и начал нам продавать, предлагать. Это, говорит, то, это Билл Хелли, это Литл Ричард, это Элвис Пресли. Что вы хотите? Ни разу не поймали. Может, потому что я был хитрым мальчиком, умненьким, и я умел прятаться. Я умел делать тихо и незаметно эти обменные продажные дела.
Значит, но вот еще важный момент. В принципе, хотя наша власть была недовольна этим делом, но самое главное, это была она недовольна не тем, то, что эти пластинки там продавались, а то, что их кто-то делал и получал за это выгоду. А вот получение прибыли в Советском Союзе было категорически запрещено.
If you were a dealer or one of the bootleggers producing the records, it was dangerous. From the late 40s, as soon as the authorities really started to know about it, they started to try and clamp down.
И вот такой случай был со мной. Значит, у меня был троюродный брат, который меня учил только плохому. И он меня, значит, подбил на то, чтобы поехать и продавать эти пластинки. Пластинки продавались в определенных местах. Люди знали это. Это были или там Угума, или рынки, или вот то место, куда поехал я. Это был Кузнецкий мост. Там этот дом сохранился, там сейчас находится аптека. Значит, приехали мы туда вдвоем. И здесь у нас была кипа этих пластинок. К нам подошли три человека молодых. И сказали, значит, что вы продаете, покажите. И зашли в рядом подъезд дома. Там они вынули финки-ножи и сказали так, на выбор. Или вы отдаете нам их добровольно, или получите эту финку под ребро. Но так как у нас ребер хватало уже на этих пластинках, то поэтому мы их безропотно отдали.
These people were not trying to bring the system down. They were sometimes accused of that by the authorities, that they were trying to pervert young people and, you know, some anti-communist conspiracy. It wasn't really like that, but they were anti-establishment in the sense that they wanted to listen to what they wanted to, when they wanted to.
И поэтому вот эти люди, ну там Борис Тайгин и так далее, там много их было, Руслан Богословский, известный, они попали в тюрьму.
I think nobody knows that he made several press machines, because милиция confiscated each time. He was in the prison three times.
В то время страшные люди были менты и дружинники. Так дружинники, они пасли вот эти места. Они все время там шатались, по этим местам, где мальчишки покупали пластинки. Я знаю, одного парня поймали, отобрали пластинку и позвонили ему домой.
They tried to press me to be agent, their agent among society of that guys. Official, I even agree, but I understand, so I not should do that. And not gave him real information. After they understand I not gave him real information, they put me myself in a prison. No, not so long, 2 years, but it was enough for me.
2 years in prison?
Yeah. Ruslan, for example, Ruslan was 3 times for 5 years, you know. It was here on the ground.
Это было примерно так, я думаю, до 66-го года были пластинки на костях. Потом рынок так разросся, так стал таким крутым черный рынок, что пластинки на костях уже никто не покупал, потому что это плохое качество, не забывай.
The authorities suddenly said it was okay for ordinary Soviet citizens to have reel-to-reel tape recorders. They'd spent all this time and all this propaganda stopping them having bone records, but then they said it was fine for them to buy reel-to-reel tape recorders, and of course, people just adopted it wholesale. What did you do when you came out of prison? When you finished prison?
Start again, from begin, from nothing. No money, no equipment, no friends, no nothing. Start again. It's not only for money, it was adventures. I would like to be people who bring culture to whole people, or to different people. I would like to do that. Yeah? I'm trying to do that even now. Пойми, мне легче в песенке все это рассказать. Как месяц шел по лесенке, чтоб звезды сосчитать. О чем трава зеленая шепталась с ветерком, и как березки с кленами брели за ручейком. Ща-ба-ба-ба, ба-ла-ла-ла-ла, па-ла-ла-ла-ла-ла, па-ла-ла-ла, па-ла-ла-ла, па-ла-ла-ла-ла-ла, па-ла-ла-ла, па-ла-ла, па-ла-ла-ла-ла-ла, ща-ба-ба-ба.
You've been listening to X-Ray Audio, the documentary. This has been the audio portion of a visual film released by the Vinyl Factory and available for viewing on YouTube. Concept and interviews by Stephen Coates and Paul Hartfield. Written by Stephen Coates and Anton Spice. Produced by Anton Spice, Anushka Siegler, and Stephen Coates, and edited by Pawel Ptak.
Congratulations. If you are hearing this message, you have successfully completed your own hand-powered record player kit. The first phonograph was invented by Thomas Alva Edison in 1877. This kit employs many of the same principles in its design. Sounds are stored in grooves, which are cut into the surface of the record. As the record turns, these grooves bump the needle, causing it to vibrate. These vibrations are then amplified through the cone and travel through the air so that we are able to hear them. Let's see if you can recognize the following sounds.
Record on, but why in fact do you think you did? Because we believe you were curious. And it's this wanting to know about things which makes you a real person. It's the one thing that makes us all, well, reasonably intelligent people, not just animals. But because the world is moving so fast, because today there's so much to know, we sometimes give up because it's all so difficult. That's where we think we can help. This record is to introduce to you a really great work of reference, Chambers's Encyclopedia. Now, obviously, in the few minutes on this record, we can't hope to do it, or you, full justice. One of our staff can do this better when he meets you personally, and perhaps shows you the fun, yes, the fun, and the deep satisfaction you could find with Chambers's. We promise he won't force you to listen. We don't allow that kind of high-pressure salesmanship. Of course, you could say, why should I spend my time listening to him? I'm not interested in buying an encyclopedia. Well, we think he has something different to tell you that might very well make you want to reconsider your opinion. Right now, we'd like you to hear some comments from people who would support his facts about encyclopedia. Here's somebody, for example, who interviews hundreds of people a year. He's a personnel officer. Let's hear what he has to say about some of the people he sees.
And of course, the one thing I find over and over again is their lack of interest in the world around them. It's very worrying to me because there are fewer and fewer jobs for the chap who hasn't rounded out his background. If they'd only equip themselves, clue themselves up a bit, then the picture's quite rosy.
Now let's look in on a typical young married family. Mother and dad are watching the TV news.
More serious than it's been since the war. Heads of state of the two countries are meeting again tomorrow to attempt to break the deadlock.
It never stops.
Both of the foreign...
You know, they've never really sorted themselves out since the first war.
It's frightening. And it's worse because I don't understand. I wish I did. I read the papers properly, but they only say what's going on now.
Well, papers haven't the time to give the full background. I think that
it's the same story every week. World events happen at such a pace that it's difficult... impossible, in fact, to understand all that is going on without some sort of work of reference. Now let's hear from someone who's sold on this idea for the home. This is a genuine case, and the words are exact.
We got one because there'd always been an encyclopedia at home. I always had my nose in it as a little girl. I suppose I was naturally curious. But then I think we all are, and I wanted my own children to have the same sort of start. It seems just as important to me as keeping them warm and fed.
With Chambers's, Mrs. Evans couldn't have found a better encyclopedia. She's prepared for that everyday situation in any home with children.
Daddy, what's demotic?
Where's the Taj Mahal?
What did teacher mean by
why?
When?
How?
Children have so many important hows and whys. important questions that can't all be answered at school. And in addition, more and more educational experts now believe that education begins at home. We can all help our children so much with the right understanding and the right facilities at home. Yes, children's questions and problems are important. And now no fewer than 2,300 of the world's best brains are yours to help answer them. Many Nobel Prize winners have worked to produce Chambers's, which now replaces all earlier works of reference, and it's the only British work of its kind. But don't just take our word. Listen now to what the press thinks. The Sunday Times.
A feat of British scholarship.
The Observer.
A scholarly landmark. As a work of reference, it measures up to the strictest standards.
The Evening Standard.
The broad verdict is that Chambers's is the best work of its kind now before the public.
And praise like this doesn't only come from the press. Mr. R.A. Butler said,
from a national point of view, it would be difficult to exaggerate the importance of a work so composite in character.
We said we wouldn't sales talk you, and we won't. We're merely stating the facts. It's up to you now to decide whether you'd like to hear more from our representative. Still without any imposition, still without any obligation. We hope you'll ask him in. Chambers's has so many uses that only a personal talk can show how it can help you and your family particularly. Don't miss a fascinating half hour, which needn't cost you a penny. Thank you for listening.
Are you listening? What the? I said, life ain't easy. We can hear you. Stop trying to quit. Start with a quit. You can't have the midnight. Make a fan. Best thing I ever did. Constantly will get. So I'm coming from checkbook.
Life's just a beat of go, go, go. Gotta recharge when energy's low. So we drink a pint of milk a day. Life's just a beat of go, go, go. Gotta recharge when energy's low. Milk's the food we'll never outgrow. So we drink a pint of milk a day. Drink milk, grow big and bold. Drink milk, never grow old. Drink milk, icy cold. Drink a pint of milk a day.
Creative professionals are successfully applying Moog performance synthesizers in all areas of music. As one example, here is an evocative all-Moog soundtrack used at the Strasenberg Planetarium in Rochester, New York. My voice also appears on the soundtrack. Here the deadly cosmic rays lose most of their energy. Moog instruments add new dimensions in tone color and expressiveness when played in combination with other instruments. Listen now to this section of a live improvisation of a jazz combo, which uses Moog performance synthesizers for solo and bass lines. Thank you.
take you armchair traveling to a lot of romantic places. To the South Seas, to Paris, old Vienna, New York. We're all the same. We remember the tunes, but not their names. This is because all the music here has been chosen by experts. The whole collection is beautifully balanced. You'll never become tired of it. To put it in a nutshell, mood music brings you a taste, and a good taste, of just about everything you know and enjoy in the world of music.
And you've been listening to the Shane Quentin Flexi Mix on X Radio, featuring Kid Koala, George Nunes, a Midland Bank advert, W.S. Crawford, Jim Johnson, and the Reader's Digest Ultimate Collection.
Presents We Love You, Linto.
I never really wanted to be a pop star, you know, but it makes my mother so proud. Anyway, this is our first flexi disc. It's on with the music.
Doing. It's a mess up. Just warned us a nuclear strike of at least 1,000 megatons has been launched by the enemy directly at our major cities. Immediately after this announcement ends, you have exactly 9 minutes to comply with the shelter requirements. Published in the Civil Defense Code, Section Atomic Attack, page 23A. Anyone found on the street 2 minutes after curfew will be shot. Take well off hits, including breathing bird into your shelter. We'll consume valuable fresh air. Leave the old and bedridden. You can do nothing, repeat, nothing for them. A special genocide squadron shall destroy the fence regularly. Remember to press the ceiling switch when everyone is in your shelter. Take down your plasma flaps. Set your radio scenario. Turn on your Geiger barometer. Give your children the pink pills and the CD green something on that. 3 and 9 and then put them to bed. At the same time, secure all explosion earphones. Take down your plasma flask. Turn off all electrical appliances except for your radio. Turn off your radio immediately this announcement ends. At the same time, secure all explosion earphones. Do not, repeat, do not leave your shelter until the inside airlock shows it all clear. Or your district hearing doctor rings your bell. Watch for the cuckoo in your perspex panel. If before this, your air becomes exhausted, or any of your family is critically injured, administer the pills marked Valley Forge Black Pocket Number 1 Survival Kit for Painless Death.
You've been listening to X Radio, featuring the crew of the Skybird Recycling Co-op. Justin Patrick Moore, Wendek Pete, Shane Quentin, and myself, DJ Frederick, with much gratitude to Stephen Coates. Remember, you never know what you're going to hear on Shortwave.
Welcome to Electromagnetic Explorations with Dr. Jacques Cocteau, Professor of Ethnomusicology and Pataphysics at the Universal Free Radio College of Spectral Analysis. An X-ray or X-radiation is a penetrating form of high-energy electromagnetic radiation. Most X-rays have a wavelength ranging from 10 picometers to 10 nanometers, corresponding to frequencies in the range 30 petahertz to 30 exahertz, and are of extremely high energy. X-ray wavelengths are shorter than those of UV rays and typically longer than those of gamma rays. Their discovery is owed to serendipity. The story of X-rays began in 1879 with the English scientist William Crookes, who invented the cathode ray tube. He had built his tube upon the shoulders of previous work done by Michael Faraday. Faraday had noticed electrical discharges could occur in airless glass tubes. In Crookes' experiments, he noticed a luminescence when there was a high electrical potential between the anode and the cathode, or positive and negative, electrodes. It was a flow of radiation. The discovery of this phenomenon sent physicists and inventors around the world onto a quest for knowledge as they explored the properties of Crookes' tubes. Nikola Tesla was one of those who sought to unlock the mysteries of the electromagnetic spectrum and harness it for the betterment of humankind. He began to observe the then undescribed X radiation as early as in 1894, when he discovered damage to photographic plates nearby the work he was doing with the tubes. He used the Crookes tube and a vacuum tube of his own design for further experiments. The first American X-ray image is said to be the effect of his research. The Crookes tube and its cathode ray beam gave off an otherworldly greenish-blue glow that came from the stimulation of the remaining air molecules left behind in the tube. Heinrich Hertz was also on the case, and he had shown that the beam could penetrate aluminum foil. In 1895, Wilhelm Röntgen, a professor of physics in Bavaria, worked on his own experiment with cathode ray tubes and aluminum foil. He built a Crookes tube with aluminum foil windows so he could study the beam in the open air. In order to study the light emitted by the beam, he did this work in a dark room where he observed a faint glow. It was not from the crack in the aluminum window of his tube, but from a sheet of paper he had coated with the chemical barium platino cyanide. The Crookes tube itself did not glow, and when he shut off the power, the glowing rays on the coated sheets of paper disappeared. For 2 months, he experimented with the invisible ray. He discovered it could penetrate many different materials, including wood and cardboard, and his own hands. He soon learned that the rays had very short wavelengths that enabled them to pass through human flesh, leaving behind a shadow of the underlying bones on the screen. He named this radiation X-ray, with X standing for unknown. From his work, he was able to create an X-ray image by capturing the bones of his wife's hand. Seeing her skeletal bones had a most startling effect. Nikola Tesla, on hearing of Wilhelm's discovery, congratulated his fellow scientist. Tesla sent him his own mysterious photographs. For his discovery of X radiation, Wilhelm won the very first Nobel Prize in Physics in 1901. What he didn't know was how his discovery would go on to become a cornerstone of modern medicine. X-rays are both short-wave and high-energy. In the electromagnetic spectrum, they are between nuclear and ultraviolet radiation. Besides their use in medical diagnostics, X-rays have been used to explore the genetic foundations of life through the technique of X-ray diffraction. Just as radio waves can be diffracted off the ionosphere and natural and man-made structures, X-rays can be diffracted off tiny particles. This procedure was used by James Watson, Maurice Wilkins, and Francis Crick in modeling the molecular structure of DNA. The X-rays were diffracted off the small atoms of the nuclei and left behind a pattern on film. These big brains used mathematics to analyze the patterns to model and predict the shape of the molecule. Watson, Wilkins, and Crick received the Nobel Prize in 1953 for their amazing work. X-rays have opened up new worlds of discovery for humankind. Let us now continue to explore and seek out the many mysteries of the electromagnetic spectrum.
I never seem to finish all my food. I always get a doggy bag from the waiter. So I just keep what's still unchewed. And I take it home, save it for later. But then I deal with fungal rot, bacterial formation, microbes, enzymes, mold, and oxidation. I don't care. I got a secret trick up my sleeve. I never bother with baggies, glass jars, Tupperware containers, plastic, cling wrap, really a no-brainer. I just like to keep all my flavors sealed and tight with aluminum foil. Never settle for less. That kind of wrap is just the best to keep your sandwich nice and fresh. Stick it in your cooler. Code. I figured out the shadow organizations and the Illuminati know that they're finally primed for world domination. And soon you've got black helicopters coming across the border, puppet masters for the new world order. Be aware, there's always someone there watching you. And still the government won't admit they fake a whole moon landing. Thought control race, psychotronic scanning. Don't mind that. I'm protected cause I made this hat from aluminum foil. Where it had this foil lined in case an alien's inclined to probe your butt or read your mind. Looks a bit peculiar. A big conspiracy.
This is an X. Even upside down, it's still an X. Many words begin with X, such as, well, of course, we, X, begins, did I show you when you, yeah, I showed you that. All right, X is a very important letter. Many words end with X. Such as,
I came down here on a kind of phone.
Pardon me? Oh, yeah, Fox. 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 Fix. X. One more X I should mention. Exit. Goodbye.